Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the College Football Podcast with Herbie, Pollack, and Negandhi. It's one of the best college football podcasts for a reason. Tune in to hear the top analysts in the game. You can download and subscribe to the College Football Pod now as well as the right time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, it's V-Week, and during these challenging times, ESPN and the V Foundation's fight against cancer has not stopped. If you are able, please support cancer research by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of what you give goes to cancer research. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bobani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have guests on, and joining us now, he's the best college football writer in America, except today we're going to be talking about that other football, like the one the hoity-toity people call football. Spencer Hall, what's going on, sir?
Nothing much. I'm excited today to talk about people with three names with you.
Yes, yes. And we are going to talk in large part about Diego Armando Maradona. And look, I understand that a great number of you are not really big into soccer, and I am not the biggest soccer fan in the world. However, this is not so much about how into soccer you are as much as they only made one of these, right? So I was talking to Spencer on the phone, I think it was Saturday or Sunday, and we got to talking about Maradona, and I was like, you know what? I need to watch that Maradona doc on HBO, and so I'm going to watch that, and then Spencer's going to watch that, and then we're going to come in here, and we're going to talk about Diego Armando Maradona. And you don't have to call him Diego Armando Maradona, but it sounds better when you do.
No, lay it out, all three. Like, I think there's an inverse relationship to how many names you use with somebody and how tall they are, because Diego Armando Maradona in stack heels was about 5'6". It was a titan of a dude. So how do I accommodate that? I give you three names, and you got to say all three just to make it maximum swaggy.
And he does. And he does, right? Like, what did you say the thing was? It's like, oh, Pelé and the Brazilians. You guys only use one name, right? Mm-hmm. All right, peep this.
You know, you're right next door in Argentina, and, you know, to get the brands right, you got to differentiate. And I love the fact that they made this little dude who came from the slums of Buenos Aires, and they gave him a mansion of a name, Diego Armando Maradona.
Yeah, and like, and if you're my age, I became aware of Maradona's existence when he got caught up in the cocaine, right? Like, he's is he the most famous athlete in the world to wind up with a super-duper cocaine problem?
Yeah, if you grew up at all near the 80s, and I refer to this as anybody who grew up in the 90s and happened to deal with the jet wash, you know, you never really grow up at one moment. You kind of grow up with a confluence of, like, three different moments, right? Like, you might have grown up in the 80s. That probably means your parents were listening to songs from the 70s. Well, if you grew up in the 90s, everybody was talking about, if you were soccer adjacent at all, they would talk about Maradona, Maradona, Maradona. But you really couldn't see how good he was until you got to the internet. Everybody could go watch his highlights, and you go, oh my God, that dude was incredible. Because it's real easy to go and pick out, like, 4, 5, 6 different goals that you go, I don't know how you did that. And that's, by the way, if you grew up watching Lionel Messi, right? You grew up watching guys who score one goal a game. And you have to think about him doing all of that and being one of the most intense cocaine addicts in the history of sport. Nobody was more snowblind, nobody was more snowbound than Diego Maradona, to the point where, and I want to get this high up in the podcast here, I want you to understand, this man achieved greatness by going out from Sunday night after the game and not coming back until Wednesday. He would go out Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, oftentimes staying awake most of the time by using incredible amounts of cocaine, because his addiction problem was as real and as deep as any athlete of this level of fame ever.
Yes, and nobody to really stop him, right? Because one of the things that I did not realize until watching this doc about Maradona is what made him famous in European soccer, right? Like, so there's the World Cup in 86, and we'll talk more about that. But I had never thought of him in the context of Italian soccer. And so he played for Barcelona. That didn't really go the way that he thought it was going to go, right? Had a year where he was sick, had a year where he was hurt. And then he gets transferred to Napoli, right? In Naples, Italy. And I didn't know anything about Naples until watching this documentary, but that's where the gangsters is at.
That's the dirty south of Italy.
Yes,
it is. It is. If you want to know the difference, okay, when you think about Italy, you got north and you got south, and they're in a whole lot in between. The divide changes real quick. And when you get to Naples, I want you to think of it as like imagine dirty Miami. Imagine, like, and when I say dirty, I mean the kind of historically impoverished, hustling kind of economy where everybody looks down on you. Everybody. Do you watch The Sopranos? They talk about this. They talk about this openly when Furio says, you know, ah, the North looks down on us. Pleh, hate the North. Well, that's because that's where all the money is. That's where all the industry is, right? And that's the same in soccer, by the way. You get guys like, you know, teams like Juventus that are owned by the Agnelli family. You might not know the Agnelli family by name, but you know their products because they own Fiat. They own like three or four of the biggest companies in Italy in this huge conglomerate. And they also happen to run Juventus, one of the most successful franchises in Italian soccer. Then you have Naples. Naples, which is where, yeah, it's mobbed up. Yeah, there are huge organized crime families there, including one called the Camorra. Hey, you want to know who Maradona ended up partying with in Naples? The Camorra, the Giuliana family. So, yeah, that's where he ends up. Now, this is actually a pretty good fit, right? Because for Maradona, he's coming from Buenos Aires. And he's not coming from the good side. He's coming from Villa Portia, which is a really rough slum. And still really isn't a great neighborhood in Buenos Aires in terms of you know, poverty, crime, all of the standard things that sort of make up this guy's like rags to riches, back to rags story.
Well, the thing that got me also in talking about Naples and the South part and everything else is that they are the darker people. That part cannot be forgotten. There is a legendarily racist quote. I forget what Frenchman said this, but Africa starts at the Pyrenees. Like, that's the way that they look at the Spanish and the Portuguese, which is kind of funny given how hoity-toity the Spanish can be about who they are, right? But that was the line. Africa starts at the Pyrenees, and the Southern Italians are considered to be the Africans. And I want to get this high up in the podcast after watching that HBO documentary. I'm not saying the dude was right for it, but I got a little bit of a better handle as to how it is that Mike Tirico could go all that time and maybe, just maybe, not realize what team he was on. Because they showed a clip of the people in the streets of Napoli, and they had a woman that looked like my mama. I was like, oh, okay, I see how Tirico might have got fooled here.
You see a lot of people in this documentary who look like old statues. You really do. Like, you see the Giuliana family, and you go, oh, those look like old Roman statues. That's the part of Rome, the part of the Roman Empire that was closer to Africa. Because you got to remember, that's all one sort of community, right? A lot of people moving back and forth, a lot of things in common. So, you know, it is the part that is closer to Africa. And that kicks in a lot of what a lot of listeners may already know about, which is, I don't even know the word for it, enormous, huge, titanic Italian racism in soccer. Like a racism that you go, wow, man, America's racist. Yeah, America's pretty racist. Have you seen Italian soccer fans? Not only racist, but cutthroat. We will intersect that racism with poverty when we taunt you. We will say things like, and you see this in the documentary, fans saying things like, ciao colorasi, which is hello cholera sufferers.
Yes.
In the 20th century, they're making cholera jokes about, you know, like the book is deep when you talk about fans talking to each other across teams and across fan bases. When the book is thousands of years old, you have a very deep reservoir of hateful things to say to other fans. They're going back to cholera, which there, I don't think there's been a cholera outbreak in Naples since like the 19th or 18th century, but they went there.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, when's the last time did they even have a cholera problem?
That tells you the level of hate and how deep the book is between teams here, right? Because we might be an Auburn and Alabama fan, right? How far back can we go? We can't go much further back than 70 or 80 years, really, if we're talking about jokes on each other. And we can't even go that far back because we're basically in the same place. These places are different enough, and Maradona ends up in a place that is differentiated enough from like Turin or Milan or Florence to have jokes where you're like, oh, this is a different world he's stepping into. But one he's really comfortable with, because we got to remember, the part of the Maradona story that works here is that he always ends up at the place where he is supposed to be, right? He ends up at the underdog team. That's one of the reasons Barcelona wasn't quite a fit, right? Because Barcelona is not quite the like working class team. That's not to say it's not working class compatible, but that's not the brand we're working with here. Maradona comes from the wrong side of the tracks, from Villa Fiorita, not Portia, but Villa Fiorita. And in Buenos Aires, he wants to play for Boca Juniors, which was at the time traditionally the working class team, right? Not River Plate, two teams in Buenos Aires, right? And the split's always like this. One side's the working class, one side is the team of the elite. He wants to play for Boca. He's offered more money to play at River Plate, and he turns it down. And then when he eventually goes to Europe and finds his place and finds the team where he's most successful, it's in Naples. And in Napoli, a team that has had no luck historically, not before and really not since.
Yo, this is all like, there's a real college football parallel to this, right? Like, and I was thinking about the Kamara and the way the gangsters are kicking with him, they're boosters, right? And the money that backs these teams, they're boosters. Like, it's the same, like, all the irrational behavior and everything else that comes out when it comes to boosters, in large part, and I think with the gangsters, it's more pronounced than with, like, the super corporate thing, but, like, with Kamara, they also want to hang out with this dude because he also happens to be really, really cool. Like, as cool as you could be at 5'5". That Messi dude, he don't strike me as being really cool. Maradona, we're talking about a different animal.
Yeah, and you know, like, Messi's never really gotten the chance to be cool. Like, he's basically been raised in a soccer lab, you know, if you're talking about Leo Messi. Maradona was raised in the streets, and I mean that literally. Like, Maradona was raised picking rags for extra money, trying to get scrap out of the garbage in the slums of Buenos Aires. That's one of the reasons why he connects to people, because he grew up, right? He grew up hard. And everyone, I think, in Naples, even if they were well off, by being well off in Naples, you still weren't well off in terms of that anyone in Turin or anyone in Florence or anyone in Milan would respect. They wouldn't. You were still rich, but from the South. Wouldn't matter. So everyone in Naples really like glommed on to that, you know, and that includes the mafia, the Camorra, right? And the Camorra just happened to note this. When I give you a favor and when I give you something free, it ain't free. Eventually, I will collect on that, which is why in the documentary, you see Maradona, who at the height of his powers, Napoli wins two titles. Napoli is a European power. He is clearly the greatest soccer player in the world. And what is he doing for the Camorra? He's like opening restaurants and nightclubs for him. And not optional, right? There's one point in the documentary where Maradona says to a journalist, "You're about to see the real Naples." And at midnight, someone shows up and he's got to go. And he's got to go to the club with the Camorra. Dude had to, on his days off, hang out with these guys. And in the end, whether he wanted to or not.
Yo, can you imagine also anybody getting like signing or being traded to an American sports franchise, and at the press conference, somebody asks, "So you know gangsters run this, right? Like, did they tell you that? Did they? I don't know if they told you that before you got here, buddy. But the G's run the streets, and you are probably going to now belong to the G's."
I mean, we're just talking about differences of degrees and variations, aren't we? Like, do you want to talk about the San Francisco 49ers? You noticed when you showed up to the 49ers in the 80s, NFL players would say, oh, now this is different. Look, the towels are fluffier. The locker room's nicer, right? The DeBartolo family takes care of us. Well, that's true. You know what else the DeBartolo family didn't have to work with? A salary cap. You know what else they had to work with? Some real estate stuff that got a little weird, got a little shady, right? I'm not comparing the business practices of the ownership of the NFL to mafiosi. No, who would do that? Never. Not me. But I'm saying, when you look at teams and you look at who owns them, a lot of the time you're talking about people who, I mean, they will leverage those relationships, oftentimes unfairly. Unfair might be a gentle word for what the Camorra ended up doing to Maradona, especially once things went sideways.
But hold on, though. That San Francisco 49ers comparison is also great because it falls in line with a comparison I hit you with the other day. Do you know where the DeBartolos are from?
Where?
Youngstown, Ohio. All right? Now, I understand that some of you listening to this might not know that much about Youngstown, Ohio. Go ahead and give it a Google, baby. Just go ahead and give it a Google. Football coaches and gangsters. That is what Youngstown, Ohio has to provide, right?
And Wu-Tang.
Yes. Yeah. They made a stop out there. That tells you what you need to know. Right. So I was talking about with Napoli because I didn't understand this. You talk about they were a bad team in European soccer.
Terrible.
Maradona wins two championships with them, which is like winning two championships with the Cleveland Browns. But what if the Cleveland Browns were the Youngstown Browns? Like if the people that were surrounding that team were like the people who surround and exist in Youngstown. That is what we have here, right? You play for the sorry team in the gangster town.
The roughest town possible. If I could do like the Stockton Raiders, right? Stockton, California Raiders. That would be this, right? The grittiest possible town with the worst possible record. I went and looked this up because I was like, I thought they slipped after they left. Slip does not describe how far Napoli fell after Maradona left. they fell down to, now we're talking Serie A, that's top tier, right? That is tier one. You are the best possible teams. They didn't fall down to Serie B. They fell all the way down to Serie C at one point in the 2000s before having to climb back. So they fell down two stages. That's how bad it got. If I had to describe his arc in college football terms, it would be this. Imagine Cam Newton doing what he did at Auburn, but instead of doing it at Auburn, he did it at like Fresno State, which I think is a pretty close comparison historically, that the peak was real high and it was built mostly on the back of one dude that they got lucky and who fit. I can't emphasize that enough. If you watch the documentary, you will see that for a while, the fit between Maradona and Naples was Loctite. There was nothing that did not fit about the two of them.
Yep, he was them, they were him. Because another angle that I had not quite thought about, because Argentina, as far as it goes with demographics, It's a very interesting historical situation. I remember once I was watching the World Cup, and I couldn't understand how it was that Brazil had all these black people on their team and Argentina did not. And so I decided to look up, why doesn't Argentina? And I looked at the population, there's like no black population in Argentina. So I was like, why does Argentina not have black people? Apparently there was a point in which Argentina had lots of black people. Again, Brazil has the highest black population outside of Africa. So I was like, wow, how is it that Argentina doesn't have black people? Apparently, they sent them all to die in the war for independence. Then there was a couple of disease things that went around the country. And so you did not have what we would think of as black people. But as Argentina goes, Maradona's people were indigenous. He is black in Argentina. Like, he is the black dude in that town. And then you look at him a little bit and you're like, yeah, I can, you know, I can see it. Hair's a little bit coarse. Like, oh, okay. I see what the game is there, right? Like, that is what he comes from and comes of, and then winds up in Southern Italy where he looks like them, you know, and you know, Argentina's got a strong Italian population. You go to an Argentinian restaurant, it's about the same.
There is a constant pattern when it comes to Maradona because, and I think anyone who watched The Last Dance and who ends up watching Maradona will identify this thread instantly. And that's, there is a chip and it can always be put on the shoulder. And he finds it in almost every situation possible to motivate. In Argentina, it comes from being Criollo. It comes from being from the wrong side of the tracks. It comes from being a little bit darker than some of his teammates. It comes from being a lot poorer than some of his teammates. When he goes to Naples, he can just transfer all of that because, like the fans who are rooting for him, like the franchise, he is downtrodden. He has not had the same opportunities, right? He does not look the right way. He does not come from the right places. And I love that about him because he carries that even past his success. He carries that into the 90 World Cup. There's a shot of him at the 90 World Cup when they are being booed. And he is looking up at the stands and he is just mouthing profanity after profanity. Just getting amped. Like you can see, it's his version of the Mike Jordan meme where it says, and I took that personally. He just doesn't know to be as cool about it as Mike because he's Maradona. He's just saying it openly, right? He's saying it while everyone else is singing the anthem. Like that's his anthem. Everyone else is singing the Argentine national anthem. And he is sitting there just mouthing very nasty Spanish profanity that they translate very well in the documentary.
Yes. By the way, DeBartolo's Southern Italians. Just in case you're curious. Yes, it all blends perfectly when we get into this story. But like when they showed those shots in Argentina, and I imagine like if you watch Narcos or any of these other shows, you kind of understand this, but it jumps out to me every time when I see something about South America. That South American poverty is a different animal, man. Like it is a poverty that radicalizes in a much different way. Like part of why you see the various levels of upheaval in all these levels of South America is because the income inequality is so staggering. So like I always talk about with the United States that everybody needs to make a trip to like the Mississippi Delta and like some super duper deep South stuff. Cause I think that there's a level of poverty that people don't realize still exists in the United States. But when you see those clips, they show of where Maradona's from in Buenos Aires. Oh no, that look, it's the Mississippi stuff we're talking about with a much different level of population density.
Yeah, at the time he grew up, he had no electricity, no running water. His father was a manual laborer. He describes him as coming home and instantly passing out. Like that was every single day for Maradona. Everyone had to work. And when soccer came through, it sounds really odd to say that somebody was the breadwinner for an entire family when they're 15, but that's what's put on his shoulders. You know, like Maradona ends up being a real messed up human. I don't want to dodge that. And I don't think the documentary totally dodges that. Right. There are many, many messed up things. There's accusations of domestic violence from one of his girlfriends. There is a son who he does not acknowledge until he is an adult when he's playing soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And everyone knows that it's Maradona's kid. Right. There are insane financial shenanigans, multiple like relapses and stops and rehab and erratic public behavior and a press conference when he is the head coach of the Argentine national team, where he tells everyone to, after they qualify, after being in fifth place, they qualify. And Maradona says, suck it and keep sucking it to a room full of journalists. Yeah, there's a lot of weird aberrant monstrosity in this man's character. But you should also know that as part of that story, when he's 15, he's the breadwinner for a whole family. That's the degree of poverty this dude is coming out of.
Yes, and he could be the breadwinner for his whole family when he was 15, because we haven't gotten around to this part yet. Holy he's good. He's good. Like I am me, soccer guy. It's not me, but I'm not blind. Like, I can recognize things that are incredibly and absurdly difficult for you to do. And you watch that little dude get out here playing soccer, and it's like, oh my God, what is going on here?
Gary Lineker played against Maradona in 86 on the English national team in the game where he has the hand of God goal. In the game where he also has the goal of the century. This is very handy, by the way. If you're a soccer starter, I can give you the whole Maradona package in one game, and it's that 86 game against England, because he just does everything that is his whole character there. He has one goal where he cheats and hits a ball with his hand, and he has another goal where he drives through. But Lineker said in his little memoriam to him, like on the air when they're talking about this on, I think, Sky Sports, he said that Maradona used to go out to midfield, and he would kick the ball in the air as far as he could, watch it, track it, and it would come right back down on his foot. And he would do that again and again. And Lineker said he never saw him move more than a foot or two in either direction. And Lineker then said everyone on the English team counted. He did it 13 times. That's how awestruck everyone on the field, who were all professional athletes at the top of their game, were of this one little dude. So the next day, England goes to practice, and they're like, okay, how many times can we do it, right? They're jocks. They want to, they're like, okay, I got to compete. I saw him do it 13 times. No one on the English national team could do that more than three times. Maradona just did it 13 warming up. That's the relationship he had with the ball, and that's how creative he was. You go back and look at his numbers, and they're good, especially good for the time, but you got to remember, like, this is not a time when somebody can put up a goal a game. This is not a time when, you know, a Messi could have existed, because people can kick you down. Soccer was a very, very much more violent game in the 1980s in terms of the style of play.
You know, and when we say kick, we mean kick. There's a montage at the beginning of the documentary of guys out there kicking each other. And I'm just like, yo, can we revisit this? I had no idea this is what the game was, because I don't see none of that when I watch soccer now.
No, it's a different style. And you're not allowed to get away with as much defensively. You're not allowed to just outright kick people down. And the thing opponents would say about Maradona is that he would kick them. Not only would he get back up with a supernatural quickness, but oftentimes they couldn't get him down because he was solid muscle. He was just, the quote I heard was that he was built of rubber. It was just not possible to take him down the same way you could kick down other players. He was low to the ground. He was extremely powerful, and he always knew where the ball was, and more importantly, where it was going. If you watch that second goal against England in 86, he runs a straight line. It's pretty much a straight line through seven defenders, six defenders. I don't know. Depends on how you count them.
With people comically falling out of the way. Right. Like, that was the thing, because I did not realize, A, that the hand of God and the goal of the century were in the same game, which is, wow, what an afternoon. That's a hell of an hour and a half that you had there, buddy. that's pretty. That's your bombs over Baghdad. Right. Everything that you could expect for a song to be is all present right here. OK, this is your thing. But they tried to state in the documentary early and something to the effect of, and I get where they were going. They were like, Maradona's greatest advantage as a player was his mind. Yeah, and they're like, there was no physical advantage he had over anybody else. And I'm like, oh, no, sir. I saw the clip of all them other dudes in the locker room with no shirts on. They ain't look like him.
No. And when he does that, the amazing thing about that goal is no one is going after where he's going. They're all reacting to where they think he might go. That's how spun he has all of them. Like, that's how wrecked he had them mentally, right? There is a goal. And he did this intentionally. This is another where you go like, well, where's he like Jordan? There was a point, like, he's very playful. He has all of those things that soccer fans like to say, right? Like, oh, what a playful player. What a creative player. What such whimsy. Okay, that's true. He also liked to straight embarrass people because going back, you know, he wasn't, his tenure in Barcelona wasn't what his tenure in Napoli was. It wasn't as successful. He was sick. He was injured. But in the Bernabeu in 1983 against Real Madrid, Barcelona's great rival, there is a goal where he beats the keeper one-on-one. That's bad. You've already stacked up your credit, right? In terms of shaming somebody when you have absolutely smoked the keeper, which he does. And then has the gall, because he knows the defender is coming behind him to try to get in goal and make the block or kick the ball away. He has the gall to dribble, almost no look, juke him, and the defender slides crotch first into the goalpost. It is comically bad, and he knew it was going to happen. And he still managed to juke him and do it because he could. Because he could. It's the kind of thing that only an athlete with just like the balls to carry that off and the willingness to embarrass an opponent because he could and then put the ball in. So it's not just that he wanted to beat one guy. He beat two guys on the play because he could and then put it in. And what did everyone in the stands do? They clapped. Real Madrid fans clapped for it because when you see somebody smoke your dudes that bad, that is the only thing left to do. That's another thing Lineker said about that goal. He said he almost applauded. He almost applauded that second goal, and then the first thing he thought was, they're going to kill me at home if I do that. I can't.
Whole defense just looks shook. Like, and that is something I don't like. I don't think of soccer as being the type of sport where one man can just have everybody. Like, when you look at those clips of people guarding Jordan in ISO, right? And, like, Jordan's palming the ball and holding it up in the air, and you can just see it in those dudes, even if you can't see their faces. You just see them bent with their knees bent, just like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do right now. I'm going to do my best, right? That is what these cats look like in these clips against Maradona.
No, and when we talk about space, we're not all inhabiting the same space. That's when you talk about a great athlete, is when somebody's not playing the same game you're playing. And when they're seeing things that you can't possibly see in real time. Like, they see the entire matrix. They see the entire 3D plot of the field and go, I know that guy is right there. And if I put the ball here, it's over. And they'll do that in the flash of a second. And that's something Maradona did over and over and over again. At the highest level, like, if you want to know, like, timing, right? Like, that's the amazing thing to me about Maradona. If you go, okay, well, what's the difference between him and Messi, right? Because you inevitably make these comparisons. They're both Argentines. They're both amazing. They're both the best player of their generation. The difference is this. Messi is insanely productive at every second. He is. He's just goal, 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 goal. Maradona, it's not quite as consistent. But when the stakes are highest and when you have the most cameras on you, he's going to do the, he did the most outlandish thing every single time. That's why 86 Mexico, that match against England and that entire tournament is so huge. At that moment, he contributed, I think, to 71% of their goals. He either scored it or he was the assist on 71% of their production.
He did the Cam Newton thing for the national team and for the professional team.
Yeah, when you're that productive consistently for a club team and for the national team and at the highest possible levels with everyone on you. You don't get, like,
somehow in both of these places you're surrounded by bums.
The talent got better in Napoli, but it never came close to, like, he never got a Pippen. He, you know, I don't think he had anybody who even compared to that, you know. And when somebody says, well, okay, like, I'm trying to make the analog in my head, that's like being in the NBA Finals or the Super Bowl. The World Cup does not compare. That game is over before we even started. When somebody goes, oh, that's like the Super Bowl. No, it's bigger. It's the World Cup.
Right.
You've got way more eyes on you and way more on the line. I mean, remember, this is a competition people have been shot over. I mean, like, players. I don't mean like people arguing at a party like it's the Iron Bowl, right? And I get mad and get my gun. No, I mean, players have been shot over this. Like, riots happen. This is an event bigger than I think most casual American fans even realize when they start to wrap their heads around it. And on that stage, Maradona felt complete comfort.
Hold on. The biggest event in the biggest city in the world, right? Like, I don't think any, I don't think there's any place that has more people than Mexico City. And they're a little different down there when it comes to their sports. Like, I know that not all the 250,000 people who can fit into Azteca were from Mexico, but I can't imagine a madder scene than the World Cup final at Azteca in 1986.
Okay, the music analog is this, okay? Estadio Azteca, I can tell you that, like, United States men's national team games there, when they go down there, you know, like, Landon Donovan had bottles of urine thrown at him. You know, you get some of the most insane, intense fans. That field is awful. It's just like playing in hell. Think about it like this. Go listen to live metal recordings. If you take any metal band, okay, if they have a Mexico City recording, it is three times as lit as any other live recording they have, right? That's it. Everything that is recorded in Estadio Azteca sounds like twice as intense or three times as intense as anything else. That applies to sports as well. If you go down there and play and you're in a huge match, that place is louder than a hornet's nest strapped to your ears. It is just the most intense environment possible. Now, please imagine England playing Argentina there. What side do you think the crowd was on? You think they were on England? No, 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 no. Now, imagine this teeny little short dude who looks like a lot of you going in there. And first of all, he cheats England. Oh, who cares when England gets cheated? That's what the world wants to see.
Yes.
They want to see England get cheated because, yeah, they deserve it.
Yeah, we forget that. They are the new, they're the Yankees. They're the casino.
That's the bank. That's literally the bank, right? They want to see them lose. Who picks up the sword for the rest of the world when they want to see England humiliated? This teeny little 5'5 guy who handballs, who strategically handballs a goal in. That's perfect.
Yes.
And then to validate that, to say that, yeah, I might have cheated, but I'm still better, he comes and he smokes the best goal anyone's ever seen. It goes beyond script. Like, it's too good for script.
And at least if my experience in watching boxing is an indicator of anything, and you guys can feel free to let me know if I'm wrong, if there's any country that likes its athletes not very tall and scrappy, it would be our Mexican brothers and sisters. Like, if you are a Mexican boxer, it is my understanding that the best way to get respect is not so much by winning fights, but by getting punched a lot. And hopefully you can win also, right? But you get the props from enduring. You get the props from grinding.
That is the thing that I think when, like, you go, okay, well, what makes Maradona transcendent? The toughness that he did play in a more physical time, and he played at a time when everyone was gunning for him. Everyone, you know? And again, that's the one thing the documentary does a great job of showing, is that he's a marked man. He's a marked man no matter what happens. It never worked. It just never, it never worked. Early on in his career, he took some knocks, but by the time he hits 86 and by the time he's playing at Napoli and for the Argentine team in the World Cup, you can't take him down. England on that play, by the way, does not man mark him. They do not mark him man-to-man. You know why? They didn't have a man. They didn't have a Maradona, so they didn't try. They zone covered him, and it didn't work.
Yo, so the other thing, so that's the 86 World Cup. I did not realize this. This is just amazing stuff to let you know how, like, for real and about it, they are about that soccer over there in Italy. We fast forward to the 1990 World Cup, which is in Italy, okay? So Italy is the host nation, and as they do now, they have World Cup matches at all the different cities all across the country. Okay, cool. The stars aligned for Maradona and Argentina to face Italy in the semifinals, and somebody at the Italian Soccer Federation was like, I know where we should have this game. We should have this game in Naples. No, you shouldn't, right? And then Maradona gets in there in Naples and says, well, you know, I gave these people a lot of joy. I think they should root for me. And then goes a step further because he's been there and he knows things. And he's like, they don't even really think y'all from Italy in the first place. I don't understand why y'all ride. He basically like, oh, so y'all gonna root for these white folks and not me? That's what y'all gonna do? Oh, okay. I see how it is. And scores the game with a goal. Now, granted, it's a penalty kick, but still, scores the goal that wins the match. Maybe the worst idea he ever had since they didn't actually win the World Cup that year. If he had it back, he probably should have kicked that one over the post.
Things get real bad after that.
And I took it personally.
and I took it personally. Well, yeah, guess who else thinks that way? Naples. Yes. The entire city of Naples and Italy, the nation of Italy, right? He becomes the most hated person in Italy. There's a shot in the documentary that shows a poll taken by one of the newspapers there. And by the way, newspapers in Italy, reckless. just absolutely reckless, slanderous, libelous. Like, the laws are simply not the same. The ethics are often non-existent, and by our standards at least, and just whatever it takes to get the story. There's a shot in there of Maradona's mistress, who has his son that he takes 30 years to recognize or 20 years to recognize, and she's just had the kid. She's lying in bed in the maternity ward, and there's a reporter with one of the old school giant microphones in her face. Like, the baby is still fresh. It just came out of the oven, and she's sitting there, and a reporter is asking her, "Hey, I know you're probably like 2 hours from having a kid, but this is Maradona's, right?" Like, nobody, there's nobody at the door. That's one thing I learned by watching this in Italy. Nobody's at the door. Like, no, like, I have nothing to say definitively other than this. Y'all ain't watching the doors. He's under so much pressure in this documentary, and he's under so much pressure in every shot you see, because there's just people in the street. There's just people in his face.
Everywhere.
He can't, it's an aquarium, and he can't leave. And, like, you follow him when he says, "There's people at my door." Asif Kapadia, the director of this documentary, does a great job of showing you that there's always someone at the door. Literally. You have to shut it. And oftentimes that doesn't work for him or for the people in his life, right? It's just this constant invasion of anything resembling privacy that he has. By the way, that match that was in Naples between Argentina and Italy, it was set ahead of time, so they really couldn't have known. However, the other match was in Turin, which is up north. They could have flipped it.
Easy.
Easy. Like, you could have just said, "Oh, we're doing this now because we'd like to avoid civil unrest."
Yes.
"We'd like to not destroy this man." And that was never even a consideration.
I just never really thought about the level of, like, I play soccer in Italy and now I'm going to play against the Italian national team. And nobody appreciated that, like, that's the game, right? Like Italy did not view this as, "Wow, what an unfortunate piece of happenstance." Like, they had a couple people in there who said it that way, right? But this is just an unfortunate piece of happenstance and sportsmanship. Nah. Wasn't that at all. It was like, all right, so how do we now go about destroying this man? Because there's only one city that cares about him, right? The rest of Italy does not.
Well, and to his credit, Maradona is a really bad citizen in some ways.
Yes.
Because he is hanging out with the Corrado, and he is hanging out with mafiosi, and he is real delinquent on his taxes. This is where you go, okay, where's the story get super recognizable? I'm going to tell you, my man had some problems with the tax man. If you want to know where he and Leo Messi are similar.
Yes.
This is probably their greatest similarity, besides being the sainted diamond level talents of their generation. They both got problems with the tax man, which I will say, Italian soccer accounting, I don't tell jokes. I don't make anything up. Go look at Serie A scandals. Go look at accounting. It's a very flexible, very fluid, and creative endeavor to account for the finances of an Italian soccer team, okay? It is deep. It is very difficult, and it is intentionally so, okay? You don't know where the money's going. You might not know where it's coming from, and you might not know how much of it is going which way. Those people are paying Maradona, who's working across, what, two different countries at least, right? When we talk about his finances, he's in Argentina as an Argentine citizen. He's now living and working in Italy, okay? That'd be hard for an individual citizen. Now, let me put it this way. You're the most famous man in the world at that point, or at least the most famous athlete. Additionally, you're on a lot of cocaine.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on a lot of coke. Also, you've been told by the local authorities, "We got you." Now, "we got you," when the Corrado say it, means we got you. For everything. It's not free, but we got you. Now, when you get them off your side, when they end up on the other side of the tracks from you, they don't got you. And that includes, by the way, all this cocaine we've just been sending to your house.
Yes.
That has a cost. And all of these favors that we've done for you, oh, that has a cost too. And it just so happens that suddenly your phone's wiretapped, which happens and catches you arranging escorts and soliciting for drugs. And, oh, all your taxes that we were talking about, working across different international lines. We don't have you there anymore either. And the authorities have some questions about you because you're high profile and you made somewhere on the order of $10 to $12 million a year when you were in Milan off salaries and endorsements in the year 1990, by the way. Like, that is bank. Maradona is always like flooded with and surrounded by massive financial transactions. When he comes to Napoli, that's already the case because he was the largest transfer fee at the time coming from Barcelona to Napoli. And then he makes good money in Napoli. Yeah, the tax man's going to have some questions about that.
And it all comes down at once because you just had to try to win the game. You just had to make a penalty kick. Like, it wasn't like it was the hand of God win against Italy. I would kind of understand if all of a sudden they decided that they needed to exact some measure of retribution. This was retribution for playing soccer.
The rest of Italy already hates him.
Yep. Only one city had a reason to have an affection for him.
Uh-huh. Because he beat everyone else. And ended like the traditional northern stranglehold on Italian soccer. Like that, it wasn't Juventus. It wasn't, you know, Inter or AC Milan. It wasn't Lazio. It was Napoli, right? And they were the only people standing between him and everyone else with knives. So it wasn't like all of Italy loved him to start with. He didn't have much protecting him. So once that happened, it was over. He was exposed.
Yeah, man. No, it was. It is a fascinating character. I also, two things that you also got to appreciate through the doc is, like, I always talk about PTI. When I watch old clips of PTI, what I see is, A, wow, camera quality has come a long way. And B, you guys make a lot more money than you used to. All right. Like, Will Bob wasn't never coming up there in no cheap suit, but it ain't the suits that he's showing up with right now. He got to that point where the tailor is like, well, let me show you these other swatches. I don't show these to everybody, you know. That was Maradona. Like, everything, like, you could see the bank get bigger and bigger and bigger, and also him get bigger and bigger and bigger because of a lot of the other things that we have discussed in the course of this.
It's kind of a miracle he lived to 60, really. By the way, in 2009, the Italian government still said he owed 37 million euros in taxes. 37 million euro.
That's like $45 million.
That he still owes them. By the way, most of that, in case you wondered how forgiven he was in the rest of Italy, most of that's interest.
Yep.
Yeah, they're not forgetting. Like, what? Like, Napoli beat us 3-1 back in like 89. So, we're keeping that interest on the tally, man. It's right there in the ledger.
Like, one thing I do wish that the doc could have gotten to was more about what he meant to Argentina, because this is still a very Eurocentric sort of documentary. And I wanted to know more about how he went over in Argentina, just so we could talk more about poor Messi, right? Like, I guess Messi is in part the LeBron of this, in the sense that you can go out here and keep winning these championships. You can come out here and keep winning these goals. You can go out here and be as good as anyone has ever been at your age, like all of that. Yo, man, that's fantastic. But you ain't this, man. You are not this dude, and you cannot be this dude. He's like Jordan Iverson and Larry Bird wrapped into one.
Yeah, he's playing at a different time. But if you stack them up statistically, there is no comparison between the two. None. Messi is the more productive player on the sheet. Now, is he playing in a different time? Yeah, it's a different game. It's a very different game. Did he have the same success with the national team? Not at all. That has not been the case with Messi.
He's also out there with bums too, right?
You know what? There is a point to be made that Messi, if he had played for Spain, Messi wouldn't have to worry about any of this, man. He really wouldn't.
Yep.
Right? If he played for Spain, guess what he'd have? Have a World Cup. Still would have gotten to play for Barcelona because that's where he would have ended up.
Right.
But instead, Messi opted to play for Argentina. And in remaining with Argentina and playing for Argentina, Messi sort of condemned himself to be that guy who has to drag everyone else along because the talent level simply will not be that high. Especially because, like, if he'd gone with Spain, you understand, he would have lucked into the Warriors.
Yes.
That's the comparison, right? Like, tiki-taka, the formation of an entire school of a way of playing soccer that not only suited him, right, but that he played at Barcelona. He was already, right, for his team, they played the same style. They didn't have to change anything. It would have been plug and play, except you would have had Leo Messi on the Spanish team.
Because didn't they go like Euro, World Cup, Euro, back to back to back or something like that?
They won everything. Absolutely everything. And And imagine that with more talent. It's actually probably good it didn't happen. It would have gotten boring.
But instead he goes to Argentina, where you'll never be Diego Armando Maradona. You'll never be him. There's nothing you can do to be him.
A lot of the reasons that people love Maradona is, you know, that identification. And I don't think that's a good thing for Messi. You don't want to be that people that somebody identifies with because he's got problems. You want to be clean, right? You don't want to have like, oh man, sort of the passionate like angel slash devil that was Maradona. That's not fun to be. You know, like it's not that he chose that, but Messi was just blessed with like a better situation and more stability,
right?
Than Messi. That's not Messi's fault.
But they'll never love him. They'll never love him in the same way.
I mean, they might love him, but it's not gonna be love.
It's not this.
Well, you know, like we might put Messi like to get like theological about it. Messi will, you know. He'll achieve like a certain level in the canon, right? He'll achieve a certain level of sainthood, but he's not going to be Saint Paul. And now Saint Paul, by the way, is what the stadium in Naples is named after. And Saint Paul, they're considering changing the name of the stadium in Naples to Maradona Stadium. So when you want to know what level we're working at here, man, we're working at, well, you could name it after Saint Paul in a Catholic country. Or you could name it after Maradona. Those things are basically equivalent. I just don't see them doing that for Messi, even though Messi is not enough words to describe how good he is at his sport. Right? Like, that's the thing.
That's not the point. That's not the point.
First of all, you know, you were the guy who won the World Cup. And like that just has an emotional resonance that really is just going to work a lot more than I tried real hard. Right?
Yeah.
It's not equivalent, and it's not equivalent in a place like Argentina. Also, by the way, like it's not equivalent for all Argentinians to say that, right? Because by being where he was from, he's going to mean something different, deeper, and more passionate to a lot of Argentinians who feel the same way, right?
Yes.
Like that's it. Like Messi will be seen as being something more sterile, something not quite as passionate, something not quite as inclusive, you know? And that's not fair. That's just how it's going to be perceived.
He's not of them for a certain segment of people that happens. And I think like for the prodigy, what has to be perhaps the most torturous moment is the moment that they realize the limitations of excellence, like what excellence won't get you for different reasons and from different people. Right.
Right. You know who gets this? Messi. And he's all but admitted it, you know, and he gets this because he loves Maradona, too. Did you see his tribute to Maradona?
I did not.
OK, so he scores a goal. The other day, and underneath it he has a Newell's Old Boy shirt. Okay, this is not a franchise in soccer that anyone should really know unless they're like super down with Argentine soccer. Okay, there's like three geeks listening to this. They're like, yeah, right? He takes off his jersey and he's got the Maradona Newell's Old Boy shirt, and that is the team that I believe Maradona played a season with on the way down in Argentina. And it's a Maradona shirt. Now, this is the equivalent, by the way, of a sneakerhead pulling out like a really obscure shoe for like the NBA finals, mm-hmm. right? I'm not a sneakerhead. I wouldn't know the best example of this, right?
Yeah.
But somebody pulling out a deep reference for this. And somebody thought, oh, that's cool, right? You rep like, you know, for Maradona, not only did you rep him, but you rep like, you know, an Argentine team that nobody really values on the international stage, right? It wasn't that, though. When he was 6 years old, Messi was already a prodigy, and Messi could do a lot of cool tricks. So they'd have him out at halftime of games to show people, ah, look, here's this brilliant boy who will be the next thing. And when Maradona was playing, he went to a Newell's Old Boy game, and he was the halftime entertainment.
Oh, wow.
So there was this very deep personal tie-in. And I really love that because Messi's not, you know, super hard on his sleeve or is not really good at conveying that a lot. And in this case, he literally was, right? That was what it was on his sleeve, was like the jersey of this moment when like the two intersected.
Yeah, like Maradona's got to be cold as hell for Messi to just realize, okay, it's cool though, I'm not that, right? Like, it's all right. It's
and you don't want to be that, you know. Like I think that would be Messi's response every time, is to go, I can't be that, and I wouldn't want to be that. And if you saw the way the rest of Maradona's life went, you know, like, do I want to be that 5'5" guy with a cocaine problem, is 280 pounds, heading into gastric bypass surgery, still in tax trouble with the Italian government, going, oh, I don't know, maybe I should recognize that son I never recognized. You don't want to be that. That's hard. That's part of the story, right? Like, that's what makes him so compelling, is that he is in many ways so messed up and does so well. Like, when people go, oh, man, he really fell apart. I was like, I don't know. your breadwinner at 15. You held it together till you held it together for like a third of your life.
Right. And showing no weakness at any time, because that is the game, that the way that you've decided to do this. Like, people's affection for Maradona is not because of his willingness to be vulnerable about these things.
No.
Like, Allen Iverson has had great moments of being willing to demonstrate this vulnerability and what the toll has been on the life that he's led, having a mother who believed that God sent him to save her from poverty. Maradona mm-hmm. wasn't giving you none of that.
No, he wasn't giving you any of that. And there's two, the people who loved him, like, didn't do him right. Like, this is like another reason why I think he's like a very sympathetic figure for other athletes, because they love you and then they don't love you, and they will turn you loose once you are of no use to them, or once you betray something larger, you know, because Naples turns their back on him, you know, that like they let him loose and he's used and done.
Now, something I did not realize until after watching the documentary and doing some Googling that is interesting is I talked about him, you know, being South American and the levels of South American poverty and how South American poverty can radicalize people in different ways. And little did we know that Maradona was all about this Castro and Guevara. You know, Guevara is an Argentine, so I can kind of see that there. But I did not realize that in the 90s, that when it was time for Maradona to detox, he was in Cuba with Castro. He's got a tattoo of Che on his arm. I'm like, oh, they don't talk about this part very much.
Told the Pope, when the Pope was talking about poverty initiatives and the importance of fighting poverty, told the Pope, hey, Padre, why don't you sell the ceiling? Like, looking up at the gold and the gold leaf on the ceiling. Yeah, that's not, again, I don't think that's, Messi would say it that way. I don't even know if Messi would do that.
That's a great way to get the Italian feds all up in your business.
To show you how wild the connections are in Naples, it's this. The guy who was his mafia buddy, all right?
Is it Claudio?
Yeah. The guy who ends up being in the Giuliano family, who's like his closest guy, ends up turning what's called pentitito, which means he's a snitch. He ends up going to the Italian feds and being a cooperating witness for them in these huge organized crime trials. The connection that he makes at one point in his testimony is saying that he intimates that he has knowledge of how the murder of the Vatican's banker in 1982 went down. Like, that's who Maradona is hanging out with. Okay. Somebody who's like, yeah, I kind of know some stuff about what happened to God's banker. That's bonkers. And those are people that he has to pal around with when he's playing in Naples.
Yeah. But that's the next level of contradiction, though. He is the dude that made all this money and all of this. And is also like all the way down with the radical revolutionary politics. Like, after he died, one thing I'm mm-hmm. always interested in, especially when people die in Latin America, like Hugo Chavez, for example, right? Like, you pick what side of the fence you want to be on with this. I ain't getting into that argument with you. But I am saying that the tenor of the coverage of Chavez from the media in Mexico on down is different than the tenor from the United States in Europe in the way that they talked about him. It's just a whole, you know, what is here is way, way, way far left politics is far more mainstream in these countries. I say in part because of the crazy levels of income inequality, right? And yeah. So Maradona could be this dude who has ultimately come up and gotten all this money and still out here on the Eat the Rich program. Like, the Pablo Escobar story starts with the idea of this abject poverty molding a man who then decided that, no, we gotta, you know, we being the people in the slums have to go about this and find a way to do for ourselves and make this happen. And Maradona is a part of that. That's why I really would have liked to have been able to see more. Like, there's a documentary being done from him by the same guy, I would say, from the Argentine perspective, rather than simply what was going on in Italy.
Really very few comparisons to that. You know, because soccer players, especially now, you get involved politically. Well, now I'm involved financially, right? Like,
yes.
You start looking at my stuff. I'm going to have to do everything by the letter. I'm going to be harassed at home. That's very real. The only comparison, Brazil had Socrates, which, again, it's fantastic that Brazil has a great soccer player named Socrates.
Yes.
Who was a doctor, right? Appropriately enough, after his career, Socrates was a Brazilian great. Socrates was also a hardcore leftist and very, very politically active in a time when that was not cool in Brazil, right? You should also note this. There are real costs in Brazil and Argentina in the 1980s for being leftist, right? And in Chile, especially in Chile, you know, there are real disappearances that happen. You know, there are real military, you know, real military threats to your life from, you know, juntas and various like right-wing militias, that they will threaten your life if you have a political stance. So it's not like this was entirely without consequence for Maradona. He became way more active later when I don't think there was quite so high a price to pay or so obvious a threat. But guys like Socrates did that.
And I want to be clear, like what I said, it's more mainstream. I guess more accurately, more people are in line to agree with you.
Yeah.
Because you got to be careful where you say it.
Yeah, it's a bigger audience for sure, you know, and which is hilarious, by the way, that Maradona did this, you know, and like... he did this and would take like, you know, pretty staunch political stance, and then would have like so much personal turmoil going on at the same time, you know, like it would have been cool if he hadn't. Like, he could have been much more effective about it if he'd been like, okay, I have the other 80% of my life, which is a raging hell that like my addictions and my troubles have caused, and I have this little 20% over here that I can advocate for.
Yeah. And by the way, just for those who don't quite understand this, when it's a regime change in South America, the regime changes, right? Like, it is not a situation, whether you think that argument is correct or not, about what people like in the United States, but both parties are the same. I mean, I ain't gonna argue with you about that, but I know you would never say that in no South America.
No. And you should understand that funnels, that kind of split funnels all the way down to sports. You know, like the whole Boca Juniors River Plate thing, very... very real. That's why they cover the streets in chicken wire so that you can, you know, get to the stadium as an opposing fan. That's why fights break out. That's why this lifelong geographic split between the two teams, you know, they're like, you're over here and you're over there. We'll vet some of that through sport, right? We will do a little bit of that. That's when we can actually put on the costume and talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, those are the rich snobs, right? Or if you're in Italy, you can just be outright sadistic about it in terms of what you say about your opponent, right? Mention the fact that they had cholera outbreaks or much, much worse, right?
Like, yes.
You know, you can make fun of the time 39 of their supporters were crushed at a match, which the Hazel incident involving Juventus and Liverpool. Yeah, that's one thing that like opposing fans will mention. They'll put like 39 on a jersey, like on a Juventus jersey, and wear it because they're taunting them over fans who were crushed like coming up on 40 years ago, right? It was like 86, I think, was a Hazel incident. But yeah, they're that cruel about it. But that's like, that's one thing you can do in sports, is that, you know, this is the place where you go to try that on. You know, now you're trying on something like super ugly. Like, this continues to this day in Italy. You know, Balotelli playing there, you know, said it was like, it damaged his career, right? It messed him up, playing with that kind of racism. It's not Italian alone. Like, this happens all over Europe, but it happens in Spain and Italy to a very, very, you know, well-documented degree.
Well, I think the last thing that I will say about this, as I watch that, and as we talk about Messi, and as we talk about Maradona, who are not combined 11 feet tall, just so you know. The two of them together do not get you to 11 feet tall. And I feel like we just need to get a lot more soccer cracking here in the United States, if for no other reason than to get these little dudes something to aspire to, man. They walk around here angry. They walk around here salty because there's no pinnacle of masculinity that they can rise to in the way American society is currently set up. But you can beat a man like that if you can go out there and beat a soccer man. And so I just think we need to have more soccer out here, because I believe that we will have happier people in this country who aren't very tall. They deserve better.
MMA is really overstocked with these dudes.
Yes.
Right? Like, MMA can't handle the influx of angry short dudes. I got two places to put you, okay? I can put you in soccer, where I can take a 5'5 guy and you could be God. I'm not saying that like, oh, you could be good. No, we can mess your whole life up. We can turn you into Maradona if you want. We can make sure you get everything you want and that it's the worst thing in the world for you. Two, I can put you in F1.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Because you know what you can't be in that tiny little monocoque? You can't be tall. You got to be like, you got to be like 5'6". Have lightning quick reflexes. So if you're like an aspiring like 15, 14 year old right now, real quick with the reflexes on the Xbox or the PS5, okay, think about F1. It's waiting for you.
Because see, 5'6 is like the awkward zone in this, because if you're like 5'1, you can be a jockey, you know, and if you're like 5'10, you can get into all the other sports one way or another. You're gonna need to be really good at something, but there's a place for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like 5'6, we don't really have much for you here in America.
If you're 5'6 and you don't want to practice getting choked as part of your sport, if you don't want to practice getting hit in the face as part of your sport, if you're like, I'm not about that, consider soccer, young man.
And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Spencer Hall. Check him out on the SEC Network. It's Mondays at 7.
Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Thinking Out Loud with Richard Johnson, Brandon Boykin, and our magnificent host, Alyssa Lang.
Yeah, I feel like we don't talk enough about the fact that you're on a TV show once a week.
Yeah, no, we really don't. They keep doing it, and I'm just as surprised as everyone else.
I did enjoy the guy that looked on the SEC Network and was like, oh, come on, is this who we're putting on television? And I'm like, that's not the brand.
I look like the SEC Network. That's what I was telling everybody. Like, do you want to know who's watching this show? Dudes who look like me. Dads with beards. Dads with beards.
And the other thing about the SEC, there are dudes who look like you watching the SEC Network who have access to private planes. Like, I have learned this from some of my more country southern friends as I've, you know, moved in different places in the world. Like, when they show me the pictures of their rich friends, they just look like the pictures of their friends' friends.
Yeah, no, like, you can't pick us out of a lineup. One of us might have the G4 waiting. Gulfstream might have our name on it. Actually, we'll probably rent it or get it through a third-party company because you don't want that liability. That's a plane. See, I'm thinking on, like, soccer owner level here.
I ever tell you I found this app that's basically, like, private plane Uber, and I just got it because I was just curious what the life was. But the problem with it is, so you can book seats on the plane or you can book the whole plane, but who is booking a private plane to ride with other strangers who have this app?
Have to do a rideshare thing where, like, oh, you got to jump out over Cleveland. You know, do we have to make a quick stop in Aspen? Because that's sort of what that feels like. I remember at one point Uber was offering helicopter rides. And, you know, this was like some, I guess, promo joke, but you could actually do it, right, in New York. And I was there at the time. You know, you click on it and you go, $550. Do I really want to do this just to say I've done it for $550? Because you could just press that button. That's why the internet works. Is you're like, I don't know, I can press this button and make it happen.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I forget what the price was, but if you have ever had to try to get from Lower Manhattan to JFK at the wrong hour, that Uber chopper was a better deal than I think that people realized it was. Like, if you could book it on 2 hours' notice, I absolutely wouldn't have done it. You tell me I can get to JFK in 15 minutes? Take it, because I almost miss my flight every time I would go from work to JFK.
Yeah, there's no absolute way to do that. The other option is this, that I pay standard cab fare to have somebody nearly kill me, right?
Yes. Well, while also, the last time I had to make that ride, because you could catch the chopper from like somewhere by the World Trade Center or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Last time I had to make that ride to JFK, I chanced it a little bit too much. I got too cocky about my global entry or whatever it was I had at the time to clear, right? Like, I got too cocky about my ability to make it through, and I cut it too close. And the route there that day, because the traffic was so bad, was all streets until got on the freeway for one exit to get off at JFK. That was all it was. Let me explain something to you about the differences that happen once you get yourself a little bit of money. So I was flying an airline. I was in the front of the plane for this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Put my stuff in the bin to go through security. Like, almost a real OJ Simpson at this point, right? Like, I'm trying to get through. I look down at the conveyor belt as my phone comes through and it's ringing, and I answer, and it is someone from the airline at the gate making sure I'm on the way.
They don't do that on Southwest.
They don't do that. Apparently, I've never had that happen in coach. And I just picked it up and I'm like, look, I just got my stuff off the conveyor belt. I'll be there as soon as I can. And they said, okay. I walked up, Mr. Jones. Yes. I sat down in my seat and then we left.
Yeah. No. I've had the door shut on me. They don't do that on Southwest.
I've had the door shut in my face.
Yeah.
Like, looked at the door get shut.
The nice thing about that, though, is that if that happens, there's somebody with you. And if you are cooler than the other person about it and just walk up and go, hey, man, listen, I'm a dumbass. What can we do to get me from here to Houston or whatever?
Yes.
They're nice about it. They're like, oh, yeah, you're an idiot. Yeah, you're like, I'm the dumbest person in the world. If that other person you're with is huffy about it, well, I was here at night. You've already won. You just let them go off for a minute, let them just sort of off gas, and then you walk up and go, crazy day, right?
The key to dealing with the airline after you missed your flight is to always remember it's your fault.
Oh, it's on me, man. Y'all did everything you could. But think about it. You put 200 people in the air in a tube every day, like clockwork. Kind of like clockwork. Maybe 20 minutes late. You do that 6 or 7 or 8 times a day. I'm going to give you all the credit in the world for that. And I couldn't make my flight? Please. My fault.
Yep, it's on me. And even if it's not on you, None of those people want to hear who else's fault it is.
Nope. I did it. Yep. Right? Look, idiot like me. And generally, that gets you a long, long way. Because you know who actually controls what happens at airlines? The person behind the keyboard at the little kiosk at the desk and the check-in. That's it. Right there. That person controls everything. They could get you to Paris if you're nice enough.
Just know this, and I learn this every time I get on first class. Anybody can get on first class. It just all depends on how nice that lady is. It is usually a lady. How nice that lady is at that computer. Anybody can get in first class. Like, I laugh every time whenever I see some black person who wants to get on the internet and tell people that they in first class. And so they get on the internet and they're like, they up here looking at me trying to figure out how I got into first class. Yeah, guess what? I get on there and I try to figure out how every got on first class too, because I'm looking around and don't everybody look first classy here. That is not specific to race. That is all over the place, because you know what? Anybody can get into first class if that lady is nice enough, or if you know somebody that works at the airline, whatever it is, right? But when you get into first class, the amenities are first class. The people is not terribly different from who's on the rest of the plane.
I will say this. Coming out of Atlanta, you always see the same two people in first class, just in variation, all right? Is this. You see, or it's actually three. One, somebody's mama. There's just somebody's mom, right? Yes. Like somebody's mom who's having that like post-kids, empty nest, 50s got too much money thing, where they're like, of course I'm in first class. This is great. Then you see a country dude, okay? Could be white, could be black, could be Hispanic, could be Asian, whatever. There's a country dude. There's somebody in like boots or jeans or Carhartt. And they're wearing that in first class to let you know, I'm wearing this in first class. I put this on so I could show it. And two or three, there's always someone in the music industry.
Yep.
And they always smell incredible. Whatever cologne they're wearing is the best cologne I have ever smelt, which you can never tell to another dude. You just walk by and you're like, bro, you smell great.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, I have made a lot of flights from Atlanta to Miami. So we whittle the country dude out. We whittle him out. Mom, she's still there, right?
Mom's still there? Yeah.
Yeah, mom's still there. The country dude gets whittled out and it is just.
Country dude's not going to Miami. Like,
yeah, no. He might fly into West Palm, right? Like, he might fly into Fort Lauderdale, but he ain't on that Delta flight to Miami. That one he is not on.
I will tell you where he's flying. He's flying to Denver. That dude's going to ski in jeans. Is what he's doing, right?
Yes. There he is. That is Spencer Hall. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.